I'm very pleased to have with me on the phone Netanel Herstik, who is one of the outstanding cantors of this generation. Shalom. How are you, Netani?
Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Okay. Thanks for taking the time to be with me.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, you may or may not know, but I decided because of the 3 weeks, there was always a problem of what to play, what not to play. So I've gone about interviewing leading cantors and people involved. With Zevi Muller, Yaakov Motzin, Yossi Malavani, Shimmy Miller, your dad, Naftali.
I'm in good company.
Danny Gildar and Levi Connes and others. Yes. So let's start with, first of all, tell us where you were born and where you were raised.
I was born in London in 1978, and I did not live a lot in London because my parents, 4 months after I was born, moved back to Israel.
Uh-huh.
So that's where I spent most of my, that's where I grew up in Israel. My father, as he moved back to Israel, assumed a position in Heichal Shlomo, which years later became the Great Synagogue of Jerusalem, and served there for 30 years, I believe. And that's where I grew up. That's my backyard.
Uh-huh.
So with Naftali Herstik, Eli Jaffe, Raymond Goldstein, these are like, you know, people I grew up with, and that's the music that I was raised on.
You were in the choir.
Well, I used to be a soloist. I did not sing regularly in a class. It wasn't a choir for kids.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't the kids' choir per se. I was a soloist. You know, I had to go up to sing my En Keloheinu, and then I could go back to my business.
I was just going to say, when I think of your wonderful En Keloheinu, what were you, 12 or 13 years old when that was? I have a great recording.
Well, it was from the age of 4 up to the age of 13, yes.
Really?
Every Shabbos, yeah.
How about that?
I had like many times to practice it, you know.
The
frequency of Shabbosim, it's amazing. The Great Synagogue in Jerusalem provided, you know, great frequency. It was like once a month, you know. It was like every Shabbos. It wasn't a very long davening,
mm-hmm.
3 hours davening.
Right.
But it was every Shabbos. And every Shabbos there's a chazan and choir, almost every Shabbos. They sometimes had a Shabbat off once a month or once in 2 months, depends on the season.
Uh-huh.
But that's where I grew up. It wasn't like once a month. It was every Shabbat.
And when did you decide to become a chazan?
Well, it's actually, I did not start with wanting to be a chazan when I'll be, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? You want to be a chazan? I actually didn't.
Uh-huh.
And I went to study law, and I had my rock band, I played guitar.
Did you say
all kind of other music?
Wait. Did you say a rock band?
Yes. I produced, you know, for years. And I still, by the way, have a lot of love and interest,
mm-hmm.
in other types of music.
Yes.
And still did not give up the dream of still doing, you know, some contemporary stuff that is completely not chazan. It's a little bit more. Current music, pop, it could be jazz, it could be rock, whatever it is. New age, I don't know. I'm very open. I was raised in a very open home, and I have an active interest in these types of music.
Uh-huh.
But when I grew up, I didn't think that chazan is going to be my thing. I mean, it's not like as if I did not like chazanas. I still, you know, quelled when I listen to my father's Birkat HaChodesh, or when I listen to my favorite pieces there, that was the place to be inspired and for your prayer to get the right meaning, elevation. But I didn't want to be a chazan when I'll grow up. That wasn't in my plans.
So
how did it happen? You're asking me what happened?
Yes.
You see, what can you do? It's in your blood. So what happened was that when I was a student, a law student, I formed a choir, a small choir that accompanied chazanim. And we actually had the privilege and the honor to accompany Shemaiah Helfgott many times in Israel when he just started, you know, when his I think the years he really, he wasn't that known, but he was just becoming, you know, this amazing megastar that he was, that he is. And the world started discovering Itchemeyer, and these were the years where I had like a small quantity to accompany Itchemeyer every Shabbat Chazanut in Israel. And we also accompanied other Chazanim. We accompanied Yaakov Motzen, we accompanied, Chaim Adler, we accompanied, you name it. Mm-hmm. It was very successful. At the time, there weren't so many successful choirs in Israel. I did it together with Azi Schwartz, which is also, besides of being a great cantor, he's also a great musician.
Yes.
And it was very successful. And this way, you know, I managed the students to get my my side money. You know, like I needed a little bit of. I'm a very independent person. I didn't like to ask my parents when I'm already an adult after army. I can go and work and then earn my own money and have my apartment and a car. You need to work for that. So that's what I did. And by doing that, there were certain Shabbosim where Chaim Adler loses his voice towards Musaf. And what can we do now? So they send the young Herzlik to David. There's no other thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or David Ullman, I remember one Shabbos, it happened to him, and you know, I was pushed to the Amud. What can you do? It happened once with Rand. Go to the Amud, David, you know, he's sick. And this is how things happen, you know. You find yourself in the Amud with a choir, and you see that you know how to drive that car. You know what to do.
Uh-huh.
It's not first time that it's in your blood. You really know what to do. You know the nusach, you know everything. Of course, it takes a lot of polishing. It takes a lot of voice lessons. It takes a lot of investment after that. But my starting point, I was very lucky that my starting point was very natural. It was very smooth.
Did you draw choir members from the TAKI, Tel Aviv Cantoral Institute?
Yeah. If you know, we always examined, determined who is going to be the right person by you know, looking into it, that singer's quality. Is he a good musician? Does he read well? And we took some from the Tzatzik choir, but some we took, you know, from all over Israel. We were. It was a small choir, relatively small, 6 to 8, I mean, I think maximum 8 people. Uh-huh. And we every Shabbos went with the other Chazanim. It was great. These were the years to do it. I was not married. I was, you know, I could go every Shabbos in a different place. And it was a great experience, you know, for these years.
And how did you come to the States?
After my wife, of course. Uh-huh. I married Tamira, and I came after Tamira to the United States. And then when I came to the United States, actually, Charlie, I don't know if you're aware of that, but I have a very interesting story to tell you. When Tamira and I got engaged, that trip, I had also I came to the United States for the engagement party, but I think that at the time of the engagement party, or maybe a little bit before, you had the concert, an unforgettable concert, one of your unforgettable concerts in Ali Stanley Hall, and I was the young talent there. I sang Zal Chaya by Yossel Rosenblatt.
Oh, yes.
It was the Yossel Rosenblatt Memorial Concert.
Yes.
And I sang one piece. I think that you introduced the young, you know, the upcoming young talents. And he gave me, you and Benny, Lubeznitsky, gave me the chance, and I'll never forget that. You know, I got the stage, I got a very, very beautiful opportunity to sing in front of such a prestigious place, in front of such a crowd.
Yes.
And among such great Chazanim. And Arthur Schneier was sitting in the crowd, and he sits next to my father, you know, which happened to be my future father-in-law, Chaim Wiener.
Yes.
They sit next to each other. They're good friends. And somehow, you know, because, you know, I did not see Tamira for a long time. It was a long-distance relationship. And I stand on stage, and I see Tamira for the first time, because as I got off the plane, I went straight to the concert.
Uh-huh.
And it was for the first time I see Tamira, which I didn't see her, like, in weeks or months. And, you know, I give her a wink from the stage because I was so happy to see her. the content was not that important as seeing Tamira, you know, even though it was such an opportunity. So when I finished singing, Arthur is asking Chaim, I see that you're, that who is that young cantor? I see that he has something with your daughter, with Tamira. So Chaim tells him, well, this is Nathaniel, and they're dating not now, right now, and it's very serious, and blah, 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 for days, you know. I was auditioned in Park East. I spent there a few months. It didn't work out, and, you know, but I think that it didn't work out for the, you know, for the best reasons, like the way that Hashem knows how to run the world and how to circumvent things. So this was how I got to the Hampton Synagogue, which were auditioning exactly as I finished in Park East, and they heard my name. They heard from other people recommendations, and that's how I ended up in Mark Schneier's show, and that's where I'm serving for the last 10 years. So that's
It's 10 years.
Here you have a nice story.
It's 10 years already. Wow. Yeah. I remember being at Park East at Friday Night Dinner with your Chaim and his and your mother-in-law and your I think you were married at the time. I remember that scene a few times. So, but it's hard to believe 10 years have gone by. So, how did you come to the Hamptons? I mean, how were you introduced to Mark? Rabbi Schneier.
I was introduced to Mark by several of his congregants. At the time, the Hampton Synagogue was auditioning to replace Israel Rand, who left a few months before I joined the synagogue.
Uh-huh.
And the synagogue was desperately looking for a chazan, especially as the Amim Noraim was approaching. And at the time, I didn't even think that I have a chance in that synagogue, because I am, you know, still, you know, kind of, you know, serving in Park East, not exactly knowing where it is going to go, but definitely Park East and the Hampton Synagogue at the time was not, you know, a couple. They were, they were not, you know, not in such great terms. They had some politics there, and, you know, I didn't think I even have a chance to go there. So, you know, at the end, so many people, and towards the end of the auditioning, they auditioned, I think, every important chazan in the world, maybe, and they didn't. It wasn't the shell for them. They were not happy.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end of the auditioning period, towards the end of the summer, when I already understood that Park East is not going to happen for me, and I already assumed a position in Florida for a yearly position in Florida for a couple of Shabbats in a year, and Yalom Noraim, I was approached by Mark Schneier after so many people have told him that, you know, I'm the right person to take the job.
Uh-huh.
And finally he called me and invited me for an audition just to come for Shabbos to David. So I told him, listen, you know, I have already a shtela for the, you know, upcoming year in Noraim, and I already signed the contract, I have the commitment. I'm not auditioning these days. I may agree to do it as, you know, as a payment, you know, for payment. And somehow he convinced me, come do it. And we have a wonderful kiddush. You must see. We have duck salad. We have this. He convinces, you know. If you want Mark Schneier can convince anyone to come. And, you know, the Hampton Synagogue is such a marvelous place.
Yes.
I ended up going there. And, you know, before you know it, and that after Kabbalah Shabbos, you know, after I finished marriage services, they're ready to discuss and give me the terms. So, you know, it was incredible. Things just happened in a very, very mysterious way.
No, they're Beshert. It was Beshert.
And this, you know, this, Charlie, this was just the beginning of the road. I mean, you know, we still have a long way to go and to, you know, it's very important that I'll tell you that as much as I'm honored by you presenting me as one of the outstanding cantors of today's world, when I hear the past cantors and I compare notes, I see how much, you know, how much more effort and time and investment I need to put in to become something of that sort, you know, of the legendary golden age chazanim. You know, that, you know, that's something, aspiration that I have. I do not see myself as a finished product yet. You know, there's still a long, long way to go.
No, but you are, have trained yourself. I mean, you've been undergoing rigid voice training. I know about that, and it has paid off. That's for sure.
I think that every work, you know, every regime, every work, steady work, you know, pays off at the end. I think it's very important to always feel as a Chazan that, you know, you're not yet accomplished. You haven't yet reached your peak,
mm-hmm.
and you still have a lot of work to do in order to reach new peaks and to gain some more advantages, to reach new highs.
By the way, a comment about your rabbi, Mark Schneier. He listened to my radio show 25 years ago. I had never mm-hmm. met him. I was a Jersey boy, and when I finally came to the city and we met each other, I was staggered to hear that he was a great fan of my show in those days. And he and his father are rare in that they have an appreciation for the meaning that the role that a chazan plays in enhancing the service. And that's one of the problems today. A lot of rabbis fight the idea of a chazan, and they don't realize what a chazan can bring to the service.
You know, they end up fighting against their own congregants and against the decorum that they lost. Because most young Israel, that's the problem today. The problem is, it's not about chazanas. It's not about, you know, the art that you and I so love and cherish. It's about the decorum. It's about, do you feel the gap that the rabbi has created in your congregation by pushing out the tradition of chazanos, or the leading of the Baal Tefillah, the leadership of the Baal Tefillah out of your synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, it becomes such a vacuum, and the decorum suffers greatly from that. Most synagogues today, they lack decorum. There's a lot of talking, and nothing is going on, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
Because you have nothing, you know, if you go to a concert hall, you don't need to shush anyone. And everyone knows to be quiet,
right.
Because something is going on. There's a stage, and someone is performing, and everyone are concentrated in what he's doing. And when the rabbi is speaking on the pulpit, there is no problem of decorum. Why? Because people listen to what the rabbi say. And he's a master of his craft. He knows how to deliver a sermon. But when you take the chazan out of the omelet, what you do, you create some kind of a vacuum that no one can fill. You
yes.
ask your balabatim to do it, but they're not professionals. It's not what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So in very, very few congregations today, unfortunately, you have proper decorum. It's not about chazan. It's about how to run a synagogue. And Mark Schneier, Rabbi Mark Schneier, and Rabbi Arthur Schneier, are one of the only people, unfortunately, that really understand that importance.
Yes.
Because they want their synagogue to have proper decorum.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, how can you have that type of ruach, you know, this type of spirit in a synagogue?
Mm-hmm.
How can you elevate the service? How can you have people's attention?
Sure.
Without, sure. you know, without a proper leadership of a Baal Tefillah.
Yeah, it really is not.
I live in Teaneck.
Yes.
I live in Teaneck, New Jersey, and I see this constant problem of decorum. People talk, and they don't even know why they come to shul. They challenge the ask themselves.
Yeah, I gave a talk on Rosenblatt in Teaneck a month or so ago, and
mm-hmm.
you know, afterwards we were having a discussion, and I said, here is a community with 14 or 15 Orthodox shuls. Okay, you bring in Motzen once in a while, and Nathaniel Herstick does a concert here and there, but you cannot find, this whole community cannot find one chazan to support. And I once thought of a solution was to form a choir first, you know, to get a community Teaneck choir and make
mm-hmm.
that sort of a incubator, if you will, to get people more interested in some serious music, mm-hmm. and then the chazan would be drawn in. But it's still a dream that I have.
No, Charlie, I would say that most likely those who came to listen to your lecture and probably enjoyed it tremendously, because I've listened to your lectures. They're fascinating. When you bring your solo to life with this recordings, the special gramophone that you bring with you, it's really outstanding. But I'm sure that you're preaching to the choir at the time.
Yes.
If you really want the change to happen, the rabbis needs to really realize mm-hmm. that they're not the only game in their show.
It's a problem
of ego. It's a problem of ego. They think it's not necessary. Why would you spend money on that?
Yep.
I'm the only one who needs to get a salary.
Right.
I'm the only one who the synagogue really needs to spend money on. I'm the focus, I'm the center, I'm everything.
Yes.
But the rabbi is missing. Okay, gesund. Okay, have it your way. Look what happened in the last 30 years. Look what happened to our services. Look what happened as a result.
Yes.
It's not about chazanus. It's about how to ruin the decorum in your shul.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Rabbanim did consistently, and they keep on doing it.
Yeah, they see the cantor as a threat rather than as an asset, and it's screwed up.
screwed up, and by the way, we're the victims. Every Shabbos, we are the victims.
Uh-huh.
When we dive in these truths, this uninspiring, dry experience—it's like going to a Shabbos table and eating dry bread.
Mm-hmm.
A Shabbos mm-hmm. without any taste, without any special effort to make it beautiful,
uh-huh.
or an effort by someone who is unqualified to provide the goods. If someone doesn't know how to cook, go to the store and buy something good. But don't serve dry bread or burn chicken on Shabbos night, because you ruin the Shabbos for everyone.
Yes.
And then what happens all over the United States today, unfortunately, very unfortunately.
Well, perhaps it's a question of education. I don't know. I'm always hopeful that the wheel will start to turn, and I do think young people are discovering chazanus. Not a lot of them, but there are a number of young people, and I think as they progress in their shuls, perhaps they'll demand it. I don't know. I've spoken to a lot of people on these interviews, and there's unfortunately a lot of pessimism about it, and I think it's deserved. But I don't want to give up, and I know you don't.
No, you should never give up. But that said, I must say that I have criticism for the rabbis, but I also have criticism for the chazan, not only for the rabbis, because we do not live in 1930 something. We do not live 50 years ago. As much as there is a need to preserve the old, there is a need to renew. There is a need to bring new styles and new ruach, to present the current, how should I put it? You have 20 years old and 15 years old kids listening to you. I'm not talking about the kids who are mad about chazanus, who mm-hmm. discovered it.
Yes.
I'm talking about those who have no connection to it whatsoever, because it sounds very foreign to them. How do you get them to listen to that special expression of a chazan? Because it's a special, it's a unique, authentic expression that has hundreds of years of roots. You know, it has musical roots. It goes back many, many years. It's authentic. It's real. But it's unfamiliar, and you need to open the door. And I believe that many chazanim, when they go to, let's say, that they do have an opportunity to present the chazanus to other congregations, they look at this as an opportunity to bring out, the best numbers and to give a Shabbos until 1:30 or 2 o'clock. So the chazanus mevinim are happy, but 75% are too tired, and the experience was a little bit too tedious for them.
Uh-huh.
Because they were exposed to a light in a very, suddenly exposed to something in a very, very harsh way. Even I daven in the Hampton Synagogue every Shabbos with a choir. I'm very much aware of the fact that a lot of my listeners, a lot of the people who come there to daven, are not necessarily per se chazanus lovers. Now, if I give one piece instead of 10, it didn't really make a lot of difference, because that one piece that I gave, if I gave my heart there, if I expressed what I had to express, and I gained the attention
mm-hmm.
and the respect
sure.
of the non-Chazanus lover, Dayenu. That's what I had to do.
Yeah, you have because to touch their soul. You have to touch their souls.
Exactly.
Yes.
You can touch the soul 10 times. You can do it once.
Mm-hmm.
Depends how much he's capable of eating. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to eat a lot in order to enjoy. You can start by eating a little bit
uh-huh.
and then thinking about
yeah,
it.
Little appetizer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the Shabbos that is long. The Shabbos that is like presenting the greatest pieces of Chazanus, and Chazan, every two sentences, stops to bring the heavy hitters, you know. He definitely satisfies the Chazanus lovers who came to listen to him from all over the place. But that shul that he went to, he missed a lot of congregants because mm-hmm. it was too much for them. They can take it maybe once a year. They'll mm-hmm. never take it as a regular leadership of the Amud.
Right.
Where the Chazanus is really, we should always remember, it's not... You know, it's not only a performing art. It's not only concert pieces. It's mainly the leadership of the Amud. It's about tefillah that the Chazan needs to have much before the concert artist, or before the big pieces, the big voice, the high notes, the glory, the acrobatics that Chazan do. All these are collateral. What's really important and the main thing, the core, is the leadership of the Amud. If a Chazan knows how to lead the service properly, the Nusach, the pace of the davening. And Shabbat Chazanut is actually, if you're asking me, Charlie, maybe 20 years ago it was different, but today, Charlie, if you're asking me, when I'm going for Shabbat Chazanut, I insist that I do not go after 12. If I start at 9, the davening will end at 12.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't matter how much you pay. Because I know it will not be successful if it will go after 12. If it will be successful for those who love Chazanut, it will be horrendous for those who don't like Chazanut.
Yes.
And I will create more animosity they will feel more estranged. To Chazanut because of that.
Well, obviously when Benny and I ran our weekends, it was for the lovers, so... What we would do, we'd have chakras, and at 11, we would break for a kiddush for an hour, and then they'd come back, and Musaf would, you know, go from 12 to 1:30. But these were for the fans. You're talking about when you do a Shabbos Chazanut in a shul that is not accustomed to having a chazan.
Well, you and Ben did something that historically would be discussed in the history of Chazanut. You really broke the records when it comes to exposure of Chazanut and how much Chazanut was out there to the public. You really you did something that no one before you did. But that's a separate issue. That's celebrating the art of Chazanut.
Right.
And that's not what I'm talking about.
No, we got to bring him to the Ummah. Look. It's no good to just have a concert and to hear someone get up there and sing a Rosenblatt piece. It's the important thing, and the thing that I struggle with. I was saying, if every shul in America, I want to have Chazanus month. You know, they have turn Shabbos and turn Friday night into Shabbos or something like that. Oh, Shabbos around America. I want to have Chazanus around America for a month. Every shul should bring one chazan. Can you imagine if every shul would bring one chazan for one Shabbos, even once or twice a year, you'd have a lot of chazanim out there working. And It would be an interesting thing. It's just a thought that I've been playing with.
That's true. But you know, that said, we also need to work very hard on producing enough good chazanim to take that role.
True.
We have a lack. We do have a lack, even though we have many talented young people who can sing one shtickle very mm-hmm. well. I've yet to have heard many young chazanim who knows how to daven well, which are two different things. And Charlie, you will probably agree with me that not every cantor who can sing well in a concert can give a good davening on Shabbos.
There's no question.
Now, when we talk about the great chazanim that you probably heard in you know, in your life, we're talking about people like Moshe Stern, we're talking about David Bagley, my father, and Peyton mm-hmm. Zion. They know how to daven. They know how to lead the service. Yaakov Motzen, they lead the service every Shabbos. They have something different to bring to the table. The nusach is rich. It's full of flavors. And most young chazan today, you know, I don't think we have enough great chazanim to lead the amud proper, and that's what we're missing.
Well, I think you're right. And by the way, I think a lot of shuls have been turned off because of a lack of an exposure, because they had an exposure to a poor chazan, to a chazan mm-hmm. that was supposedly acting as a chazan, but he actually turned people off because he didn't do the proper nusach, and also mm-hmm. perhaps didn't even have a good voice. Yep. I mean, I cringe sometimes. You know, I go into a shul and I hear somebody up at the umid, and that person is acting like he's a Caruso, but nobody's yeah. telling him he's really not.
Yeah, well, the main thing also is that if you are a Caruso, let's say that you were, let's say for the sake of the matter, we managed to bring Caruso to life and teach him how to sing one Chazan of Peace properly. What does he do with the rest? Does he know how to really lead the Amud? If Pavarotti would sing Chazanas, one piece of Chazanas, would he be a good Chazan? No. The answer is no. Because you do need to know how to lead the service, how to run, how to, you know, to pace yourself. In certain places you need to go faster, certain places you need to go slower, you need to change it, to play with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a leadership.
Sure.
It's a leadership, the same, it's the leadership of the Amud, the same thing that the rabbi is the leadership from the pulpit, the chazan is the leader of the Amud. And when you don't have a leader there, it doesn't matter what voice you have. It can be a horrendous experience when you have someone with a beautiful voice who doesn't know how to lead the service.
Well,
no nusach. I've seen examples mm-hmm. with people with really marvelous, well-coached voices who went to the Amud, and the result was not pleasant. It's great in a concert hall. It's not good in the Amud.
Right.
So, you know. But, you know, fortunately, we do have some, you know, some marvelous chazanim, my peers, my colleagues. You know, we have Yanki Lemmer. We have Zevi Muller in New York. We have
Chaim
David Berzin.
Ozzy Schwartz.
And we're really, actually, yeah. New York, Ozzy Schwartz. We have Gideon Zellermeyer. We have... New York is really full of wonderful chazanim
mm-hmm.
today. Young chazanim.
Young, yes. It's... at least we have it here. It's great living in the city. So, you know, this is... I've appreciated your expressing your thoughts, and I congratulate you on the I hate to say job, but it's more than a job, but that you do at the Hampton Synagogue. And I know how the congregation really, really looks forward to your davening and your chanting. And I've been there many times, and it's unique, and it's the choir, by the way. Of course, your choir is one of the finest in the country, if not in the world.
This is how fortunate I am to daven with such a great choir every Shabbos,
yeah.
under the leadership of Yitzhak Chaimov.
Yes.
And by the way, another thing that I, you know, this is why I don't go a lot for Shabbosim, because I also always want to bring my choir with.
Uh-huh.
And why is that? Because I also believe that the experience that I can bring with a choir is very, very, very different with the experience I can bring without a choir.
No question.
And
no
with
question,
the choir, no my the palette is so much wider. You know, the possibilities of expression are so different, and mm-hmm. the music is so more varied. So that in this way, I can really cater to so many different people in the crowd. And when I do so, I really feel that I can connect even the non-Chazanus lovers to the service.
Yes.
And it's really actually successfully done in Tinek. Whereas if I would go by myself to daven, as a Shliach Tzibur, I doubt how many non-Chazanus lovers would dare to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would be afraid it will be too long, it will be too empty. They hear a Chazan voice, they already have an allergy to it, you know. In Teaneck, it worked, even though, despite of all the non-Chazanus lovers
yes.
in my shul, you know, we bought the choir, we threw some Leonard Cohen inside, some Billy Joel, some contemporary stuff. And because of these little candies that we gave them,
uh-huh.
that some Mevinim were plotting, oh my God, that's the Shabbos Chazanut? Yes. Yes, it's not only for you, the Chazanus Maven.
Right.
It's also to include the other person. And then when you sing the Glantz pieces or Kotsavitsky piece, the other person who would never ever listen to that, now he listens. Now he's open to listen to it. So, you know, hopefully we, Charlie, your effort throughout the years would, you know, would carry the fruit. And we will see more leadership of the Amud, you know, in the next few years.
Amen.
As we said, the situation is very, very bad.
Well, yes, and we just have to work harder. That's all to try to change it. We may not succeed, but we can't stop trying. But I again thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us, and continued success with your wonderful. Situation at the Hampton Synagogue, and with other adventures that you will be undertaking, because I know you started to tell about some of your other musical interests, and they're very varied. And whatever you do, I wish you much success.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Charlie. I'm actually about to release a new recording.
Uh-huh.
And we will discuss that.
Okay.
When it comes out, it will be a very beautiful celebration of Chazanut, which is a wonderful production of, you know, more than 80 musicians.
Wow.
And,
I'm looking forward
to
that.
In one of the finest studios. And have some very interesting collaboration.
Okay, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sure my audience is also looking forward to it.
Wonderful.
Thanks.
Thank
again.
You, Charlie.
Okay. Shalom. Okay, we were listening to Netani Herstick, and let's go on now to Cantor Moshe Stern. I'm very, very pleased and honored to have with me on the phone the outstanding cantor, Cantor Moshe Stern. Shalom, Moshe. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, fine, thank you.
This has been a great year celebrating your 80th birthday, and it's wonderful that you're in good health, and we only wish that we could hear more of your
stuff. Well, the good health, well, this is the, you know, well, it's okay, you know,
uh-huh.
but, you know, at this age already, if someone has no problems with any health, doesn't have health problems, it must be something wrong with it.
But Baruch Hashem,
yes. Yeah, whatever I Hashem granted me, I'm very happy.
Yes, you were born in Budapest.
I was born in Budapest to a dynasty of Chazonim. My father, Lamasholem, and his father, it goes back for generations, you know, and of course all my uncles, all my brothers, were all Chazonim. So I was born into, you know, to this profession.
Uh-huh. Were you in a choir when you were younger?
I was in a choir only for the choir of my late father, Lamasholem, me and my other brothers. We used to... you sing with him in shul, you know, and this is where I got my real education, you know.
I see. When did you leave Budapest?
We left Budapest in 1950. It was already after the Shoah, of course. During the Shoah, we, of course, my father, my brothers were taken away to labor camps and so forth. But I was a kid at that time, a kid of 10 years old, and then later on they... gathered us into a ghetto in Budapest, and when the Soviet army released us, you know, and in 1945, beginning of 1945, And a few years later, we decided we are coming to Israel, to settle in Israel, especially because one of my brothers, Alva Shonen, was killed here in the 1948 war. And my brothers came a bit earlier than we came.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what was your first position as a chazan?
First of all, you know, I was a very well-known wunderkind, you know, child prodigy in Hungary, in Budapest, rather, singing in the concerts and in the radio shows. But, you know, during my years of mutation, of my father didn't let me sing at all. So I started around when I was 18 years old. I had the first position for a Shalom Keeper in the town of Ramle, and then... And a year and a half later, I was engaged as a chief cantor of the great synagogue of Rehovot. And then I was there about for 3 years. And from there, they called me to the Har Shlomo shul, which was just was built, you know, in 1958. And actually, from the first Shabbos, I was officiating there for about five years.
Mm-hmm.
Until from there, I was quoted to South Africa, to Johannesburg, to the Besamedra Shagodl. I was also serving there for about almost 6 years. From there, I was called to, that was my height of my career, when Moshe Gusevitsky Olav Shonam died in 1966. I was still serving in Johannesburg, but then one of my concert tours in New York, in the Border Park, they heard me, and immediately they offered me the job in Bethel, and I occupied the dome there in 1968, I was there for almost 10 years.
Those were wonderful years, for sure.
Yeah, wonderful years. And from there, we came back to Israel. We settled back in Israel with the young children, and I took up only for a Rosh Hashanah Keeper job, you know, position in... First in São Paulo, I was there for about 24 years.
Yes.
And from there, we again decided to come to Israel, and I was called to Chicago, to the Loop Synagogue, and I was serving there for about 13 years, also for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur only.
Yes.
And from there, you know, at about 2 years ago, because of my health problems, you know, physically problems, I couldn't continue. So now I am completely retired.
Well, that's fantastic. What are your thoughts about the Chazanis?
Charlie, this is a very, very difficult question, and it's a catch-22. In the earlier years, and I would go back even till about 10, 15 years ago, where we had the Chazones were still perishing, and it was really what it should be. The last few years, it's a complete change in the Chazonish field. You know, the Nusach is almost forgotten. Chazonim and the Baal Tefillahs, you know, they are using strange melodies. On the contrary, they're taking melodies from the pop music and so on, and then they're using the text from the Tefillahs, you know, and so the music completely changed. There is no Nusach anymore. And I don't even mix, you know, in the Chazonish circles, because of that, because no one takes an effort, you know, to bring back the golden years of Chazonish, unfortunately.
This
is my opinion.
They're learning the Nusach.
The Nusach is forgotten, and even if they teach Nusach, when it comes to the actual execution from the tefillot, you know, the Nusach is forgotten, and they go in only, you know, it is in well-known melodies from so-called Hasidish music, which is not also not Hasidish, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what is good, that goes today, you know, and they, Look, I want to just tell you, the last recession, of course, I couldn't travel anymore, so we went in one of the famous hotels in Jerusalem to spend recession in Yom Kippur. And the hotel is packed, you know, about 500-600 people in shul, you know.
Yes.
And when I heard the davening, I didn't know where I am. I don't know if this is a Shabbos or Shol HaShergolim or Tisha B'Av. Or no. I never heard that. There's no nusach at all. You know, if someone can sing on the Sane Toikev, one of the most holiest prayers, or some can sing on the melody of Eshes Chayil Meimtso, Sane Toikev Kedushas. You know, and so other than, as I mean, this is the end. I'm really, really very sorry to tell you that, but this is the position today of Chazones, so-called Chazones. There's no Chazones at all.
Well, some would argue that they're responding to the audience, but they have to lead the audience.
It's the audience, you know, the audience love it. I mean, 500-600 people singing the melody, these melodies, you know, has nothing to do with the Nusach, with the ancient Nusach, traditional Nusach, nothing to do. You cannot hear this in shoes today. No, not at all. And the Roilem, you know, the Tzibur, this is what they know today, and they know the Nusach because they never heard it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very popular, this type of davening.
Yes.
And the performances, and it is very, very well known and very well accepted. But they have nothing to do with our Nusach. This is the position.
Yes. The other issue is that the shuls are not willing to pay.
But the shuls don't want to pay. The shuls are not interested in chazonim. The real chazonim that they still have, you know, the roots, and they know the nusach, but they cannot perform it because the gaboim don't want it. You know, I know a case that one of my students was called over to England, you know, mm-hmm. to London in one of the most famous shuls. Here they said, look, we are not interested in chazones, we are not interested in choir pieces, you know, just we want the Nusach Karlibach and so forth. Well, there is no such a thing, Nusach
no.
Karlibach.
I mean, no.
Karlibach was a genius. I mean, his pieces and compositions are wonderful, but they are just not fitting the our shul service, the Nusach. Not in the shul, otherwise that's tremendous. So this is what goes to them. They want Shabbos Karlibach. They want the Nusach or other composers of this sort of music, what is called cantorian music, which is not at all. So this is in the shuls today. I mean, they don't pay. You know, that you hardly can find two, three chazonim even in Israel that they serve as chazonim, as permanent chazonim. In England, that was once the base of chazonim and liturgical music and choirs. Every shul, little shul, had a choir. Today, nothing. Maybe one or two chazonim, a permanent chazonim. And also, you know, they are asked to use the strange nuschaot that, you know, which has nothing to do with the tefillah.
Yeah.
This is the position.
Yes, and the concert.
It disturbs me very, very much. But there's nothing that can be done about it.
No.
So this is the case today with the Chazonish.
Yes.
This is my opinion, and it's well known. I always say the same thing, you know, for years.
Yes.
I think we had an interview about 2-3 years ago.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
Quite a long interview with you, Charles.
Yes.
And I think I just mentioned all the same thing
at
that time.
And the concerts don't make up for
the
it.
The concert is something else. The concert is something else. But even in the concerts, you know, when they don't change the program, the repertoire. I mean, all the concerts, they're singing the same numbers. Nothing, something new. Nothing, something really refreshing. Something really liturgical. Everything is today, you know, the Hopkes and this is, but this is, you know, there is an old song which that was one of my favorite songs from years back. which is called Chazonim of Probe. I'm sure you heard it.
Of course.
But this was written about Shvit Sholem Sekunda about 100 years ago or something like that, you know. And they, maybe 80 years ago, I don't know.
Yes.
But this is what it goes today. When it comes to the jazz singer, you know, he takes the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was foreseen by him. You know, it was unbelievable, and this is what's going on today.
Right, Moshe. Some of my most memorable memories of Chazanis were your davenings when we were running our Cantor's World, and also the concerts that you were always so unique and.
Charlie, my friend, those years I are over, you know. And unfortunately, those years are over, and that is you cannot produce something that it should go away with the old golden era of Chazonis. Today, you have to go, you know, you have to go with the time, which I agree. But at least, I mean, the Nusach, at least, I mean, I don't want a Chazonis. At least the Nusach, the Sinai, should be kept in the davening. I mean, this is the first thing that the Chazan has to produce and has to know, and their Tzibur, they have to know this. So, but this is forgotten.
Yes.
Oh, very sorry.
Well, and it's a question of education also, I think.
Of course, but it's too late. I don't know. This should be done before 10, 15 years ago, the education, you know.
Uh-huh.
That they should be keeping the basic Nusach, you know, and not to just, you are forgetting it completely.
Yes. And as I often say, when someone says, I hate Chazanis, I always say, well, you probably never really heard Chazanis.
Yeah, right.
Well,
unfortunately, this is the situation with Chazanis today.
Oh, well.
But look, the Roilem, you know, they like what's going on today, so at least let them come to the shul and enjoy it. At least they should come to shul, you know.
Yes.
And daven, and they, I don't know. It was the same story with opera 30, 40 years ago. You know, it went down, and then it had been an awakening.
Yes.
So, well, I hope that, I don't know if I'll still be around, you know, when it will happen. But I hope, and it should happen, that should the Chadish Yomeinu Kedem, you know, it should be back and as it was before, and in the Sholem Al Yisrael.
You know, the wheel does seem to go around. It's hard to be optimistic, but I don't want to be pessimistic. But I understand 100% what you're saying, Moshe. But listen, I certainly appreciate your taking the time to share your thoughts.
You gave me the opportunity that I should express myself, you know.
Yes.
What I feel today about Chazonis. There are maybe other Chazonim that maybe they don't want to agree with me, but this is my feeling, this is my opinion, this is how I see today the Chazonis.
Well, let's hope for better days. And
meanwhile, the Geula will be here. The Mashiach will come, and then it will be, all these problems will be solved. You know.
Amen. Thank you so much, Moshe.
Thanks very much.
Wish you all the best. Okay, shalom. Well, that was this wonderful interview with Moshe Stern a couple of years ago. I've seen him in Yerushalayim. And let's go now to an interview that I had with Gideon Zellmeyer. By the way, this is 2017 that I'm recording this. I recently heard Gideon with his incredible choir, Montreal. It was just outstanding. It was thrilling. Let's go to this interview with cantor Gideon Zellmeyer. He's in Montreal at Shor HaShemayim. Me on the phone, Gideon Zellmeyer, who is the Chazan at Shor HaShemayim in Montreal. Shalom, Gideon.
Alecha Hashalom. Great to be here.
Okay. I had the pleasure of seeing you recently with Ozzy and Chaim David, I guess it was.
Yeah, that was a wonderful concert. The three of us are great, great friends and almost, you know, brothers to each other. So it's always fun for us to get together and sing together.
Yeah, your friendship was quite evident there. So tell us about yourself, where you were born and raised.
I was born in Providence, Rhode Island, but grew up in West Hartford, Connecticut. And 4 years of university in Washington, D.C., at George Washington University. A couple of years in Manhattan. 2 years based in Jerusalem, but studying at the Tel Aviv Cantorial Institute with Naftali Hershtick and Raymond Goldstein and Chaim Feifel and many others. And since 2001, I've been in Montreal.
Oh, it's been that long already. Wow.
It's been that long.
Time flies so quickly when you're having a good time.
Yep, it's a great time. It's a great city, and there's a great Jewish community here. There's a lot of cantorial history here. Shaar HaShamayim in particular is quite unique. Next year, 2016, in the fall, will be our 170th anniversary.
Yes, wow.
And the synagogue has a full-time men's choir since 1887.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's really quite remarkable. And we've had a long tradition of choral music being part of services here. Mm-hmm. The sanctuary is a majestic European style, just under 2,000 seats with lots of wood and stained glass and so on. And it's just very beautiful. The traditions of the synagogue go back to London. So still to this day, the clergy and the balabatim that sit on the bima wear striped pants and morning coats, and balabatim wear top hats.
Oh, really?
And it's a very formal, very regimented kind of a service. Lots of German Jewish roots here.
Uh-huh.
But actually, it grew out of it. It's the second oldest synagogue in Canada. The oldest in Canada is the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue in Montreal.
Uh-huh.
And so there are various little Sephardic holdovers of certain traditions as well. The mourners come to the front of the sanctuary to say Kaddish together.
Mm-hmm.
And certain other things that are certain Germanic things, like we don't say Brichshme here because the Zohar was too risque, I think, for German Jews. But
can you repeat words?
Special. It's a throwback to a different era, and it's a real privilege for me to be part of a synagogue, a congregation that values preserving the European choral tradition.
Uh-huh.
So we have a mix of you know, music each Shabbat that ranges from the choral standards of Zulzer and Lewandowski and so on, the cantorial Golden Age classics of Yosele and all his like, modern compositions of Meir Finkelstein and Naftali Hershtick and any number of Hasidic compositions. I mean, it really runs the gamut in terms of the last 150 or so years of Jewish music history.
Interesting. I know you've made some great recordings.
Over the last 5 years, we've released four CDs, but three recordings. The first one was a sort of a greatest hits. The second one is an interesting collection where we decided to show off the fact that we have a multifaceted repertoire where I don't have the pressure of repeating the same music every week.
Uh-huh.
So we recorded 5 different examples of Ein Kamocha and 12 different examples of Uvnucho Yomar.
Yes.
The third is a two-disc set of all music of Yamin Noraim, timely for this time of year.
Yes. Do they let you repeat words?
Yes, they do.
Uh-huh.
I don't do it gratuitously. I mean, my teachers, certainly if anyone who heard Naftali Hershtick Davin at the Great Synagogue, he never used to repeat words gratuitously.
Uh-huh.
I try not to do it just with frivolity. But, yes, they do let us repeat words.
Well, I think it's fascinating the commitment that the shul has made to music, and to Chazanut. It's unique.
It is unique. It really... I'm hard-pressed to think of where else it exists. You know, unfortunately, we live in an age of attrition when it comes to serious music in synagogues, and thankfully I seem to have found myself an oasis. Certainly a lot of that was established by the longtime music director here, Stephen Glass, with whom I made all of the recordings, and it's a tradition that's being continued by his successor, Roi Azulai, who has just finished his first full year with us from Israel. And actually, he came to us from a choral tradition. He was the director of the choir at the synagogue in Strasbourg, which was where Naumburg was the music director years ago. And so he also came from a place that valued a strong choral tradition. So it was a natural fit for him to come here and join our staff.
Is this Azulay someone who has recorded? I have quite a few recordings from...
He's a conductor. He's conducted quite a number of cantorial concerts with Israeli orchestras and choirs, and certainly most of the best known of my colleagues he's worked with. And we were lucky to snatch him and make his home here in Montreal.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How does one get into the choir?
By audition. The choir is, you know, people ask me, is the choir professional? The choir is professional by virtue of the fact that they're paid. For many of them, music is an avocation rather than a vocation, though there are a number of, there's always a, for instance, in Jerusalem when I was singing in the Great Synagogue Choir, there would always be a sort of a regular rotation of cantorial students that would be coming through Jerusalem on their year that they spend in Jerusalem as part of their cantorial programs. So we have a certain rotation of McGill music students that come in and out, but our choir is all Jewish, and everybody's auditioned, and musically it's on a very high level, and you know, I have to say, with great pride, we do a tremendous amount of music over Yamin Noraim. We have close to 40 separate compositions in our repertoire just for Slichot.
Wow.
And every service is just chock full of music. Musaf on Rosh Hashanah is just a parade of hits of all the great repertoire from compositions that are indigenous to Shaar Shamayim that were written by music directors here over the years, to master choral works like I mentioned before of Lewandowski, Zulzer, Naumburg, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Cantorial classics of Yossel and Kvartin and certain things from the British tradition of Samuel Allman. I mean, you could just find everything. It's really quite a potpourri and a eclectic but effective mix of different genres and different ages and different times of composition, different places. It's really quite remarkable.
Do you have an assistant cantor?
There's a Chazon Sheni / ritual director who takes care of laning and things like that. And we'll daven when I'm not in town. But to answer your question, yes.
Uh-huh. We were in Montreal a year or so ago, and I stopped in your shul, and I got a grand tour. I forgot who it was, the director. I think he was from the States, but it was just an awesome place. Really,
yeah, it's quite a plant. You know, it's basically a full block, and it's also in a really beautiful part of the city that is immediately adjacent to downtown. The building itself, the sanctuary, was built in 1922.
Mm-hmm.
And the building had an addition that was added in 1967, which enlarged the size of the balcony a bit and also created some more social hall spaces and things like that. But this is actually the third location that the synagogue has. The first two were various points downtown Montreal, which are no longer, those buildings are not standing anymore, but there is pictorial evidence of it. And you know, with 170 years of history, the synagogue has done a really remarkable job of cataloging that and documenting it. So there's mm-hmm. a museum that you can see at the shul with pictures and different ephemera from different points in our history. If you walk down the large staircase from the sanctuary level to the social hall level, you'll pass by two of our past presidents, Lazarus and Lion Cohen, who respectively were Leonard Cohen's grandfather and great-grandfather. We have lots of interesting Montreal roots that people that had their B'nai Mitzvah at the Shaar and are part of the Shaar lore. So,
there was a story we were told about Chagall.
Yes, an awful story. But in 1967, when they built the, so you told the punchline.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
In 1967, when they built the Daily Chapel, which is a our daily chapel is somehow the size of a lot of shuls.
Yes.
It seats just about 300. And not that we have 300 people at every minyan, halabai.
Right.
But they commissioned an artist to make stained glass windows, and as the date to the installation drew near, they asked the artist to see proofs, and the artist said, "I don't do proofs. You commission me, you pay me, and we install the work." And the synagogue insisted on seeing proofs, so Chagall sent the windows to Hadassah instead of having them in our chapel. It's a terrible story.
Oh, yeah. A while back, there seemed to be a migration from Montreal to Toronto. What was the situation, or is the situation in Montreal and the French quiet at the moment?
I don't know that it's ever completely quiet. I mean, if you can open the newspaper here most any day and you'll see some kind of a story about an English-French tension over something, whether it's a parking sign or an awning over a shop that doesn't have the appropriate size difference between English and French lettering. Look, I'm an American. I've lived here for 14 years, and embarrassingly, I don't speak French. But I married a Montreal girl, and she speaks French.
Oh, that helps.
And my kids, at this point, speak French better than I do. That having been said, so yes, it's quiet. It's certainly not an active volcano, let's say.
Uh-huh.
It's always there. We did lose a generation or so of really good people to Toronto. Probably about 25, 30 years ago, I would say that Montreal's Jewish community was about 120,000, and Montreal's was about 90, and I think those numbers have flip-flopped, and we're about 90, and they're over 120.
I see.
It might even be even larger.
I see.
What can I tell you? I mean, I think that Montreal is a wonderful city. It has a lot to offer. It also has a tremendous, I mean, it's interesting, like a lot of cities go through phases of where the Jewish community initially arrives and then where it migrates to and then what happens in that area. So there's an area that's called the Main or the Plateau that is along St. Lawrence Boulevard, which is a major north-south artery that cuts across the city. And that's an area where the Jews initially arrived here probably 100 years ago. And eventually they moved west towards the suburbs, and Westmount is where my synagogue is, which is one of the first of them, but now there's big Jewish suburbs of Côte Saint-Luc and Hampstead where the Jewish concentration is up over 90%.
Wow.
In the meantime, what filled in a lot of that area in Outremont is there's a huge Hasidic community there. Of all stripes, if you pardon the expression. I mean, you have a Bell's yeshiva, you have a Lubavitch yeshiva, you have Skver, you have any number of different Hasidic groups that are there and have very active and vibrant communities. There's lots of kosher dining in the city. It's easy to buy kosher food in the city. You have aficionados of cholent who go around and rate the cholent from the different places that you can buy it from. It's really fascinating that way. So there's lots of Jewish color in Montreal, and of course we have a growing Sephardic population, which has been over the last 25 years because it's easy for Moroccan Jews and so on to come in and be able to get along immediately speaking French here, and certainly we've seen a rise of an influx of French Jews as well in the last number of years.
Uh-huh.
As they've gone through the well-documented misfortunes of the French Jewish community.
Yes.
It's a few community with a lot of international flavor. It's really a fun place to live.
Great. Gideon, where do you see Chazanis going?
Where do I see Chazanis going? Look, my answer is probably colored by the fact that I live in a place where it seems to be doing pretty well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it's hard times for a lot of my colleagues and a lot of the communities that they serve, and I think that it probably means that Chazanis is going through a period of adaptation, where the standard or what would have been a standard virtuosic chazan of a certain era, who can just stand up and give pieces and things like that, doesn't really fly anymore. Partly because congregants aren't looking for that. They might be looking for something that's more participatory, partly because congregants don't necessarily understand it, as we see an attrition of really knowledgeable shulgoers and things like that. I think it's a challenge to the chazan of how you can adapt to a different climate. I know for my community, one of the things that I've come to realize is that being an effective chazan is serving a balanced meal. You can't serve too much savory, and you can't serve too much sweet. You have to do a little bit of both, and realize that participation in a service doesn't just mean singing and clapping along, and it also doesn't mean standing and listening and sort of losing yourself in a moment. I think you have to put yourself in the seats yourself, put yourself in the pews, and try to imagine the emotional ebb and flow of a service, and say, if you were listening to this, how would you feel about it? I mean, one of the best example pieces of advice that Naftali Hirshtick ever gave me when I was a student was to take a recorder, put it on a table, daven. Leave it for a couple of days, go back to it and listen to it again dispassionately, and say to yourself, do I like the chazan that I'm listening to?
That's interesting.
What do I like? What don't I like?
And it was a
great way for me to discover whether it was things about Hebrew pronunciation, whether it was things about putting commas in the wrong places or accents on the wrong syllables. And that's pretty mundane stuff, but that's important too. And obviously adherence to nusach is of primary importance, and I think it needs to remain primary importance, because otherwise what are we doing? But I think that if we can think honestly about what kind of an experience we're giving for our listeners, for our daveners, are we engaging them? Are we challenging them? Are we patronizing them by singing things that are too simple and too silly? Are we going over their heads? You know, I think that it requires a real honest assessment of how well we're doing, and it takes an educated listener to be able to do that. And I also think that, you know, again, this winter I was thrilled to be able to have a short 3-month sabbatical, and spent 6 weeks in Yerushalayim, where I studied with my teachers for the first time in close to 15 years. And over the years of doing it week in, week out, we either fall into bad habits or find ourselves stuck like a broken record and can't get our way out of certain things, and it's not good. I have an interesting tradition in my shul that I give a sermon every year on Shabbat Shira.
Oh, really?
And a couple of years ago, I spoke about, and I think I called the topic religious ergonomics. Anybody who knows what ergonomics is, when you buy a desk chair or a computer monitor or so on, they're all made a certain way to fit the geometry of the human body, so that when you sit all day and you type all day at your desk, you're not going to hopefully develop carpal tunnel syndrome or a bad neck or a bad back and so on. They're preventing repetitive strain injuries. So how do we as Jews, and especially us as Chazanim, prevent the repetitive strain injuries that can come from being forced, mandated halachically, to say the same words every single morning and every single evening and every single Shabbos and every single Yontif? That's a tough challenge for us.
Interesting.
And we have to make those words new and fresh each time we face them and each time we communicate them to people. Otherwise, if we're bored with them, that boredom can't help but be communicated to the people that are davening with us.
For sure.
So I think that's a tremendous challenge for the next generation. I mean, I am part of the next generation. I think that's a tremendous challenge for me and my colleagues, and I hope that we have the koach and the fortitude to be able to meet that challenge.
Well, I certainly appreciate your sharing your thoughts with us, and
my pleasure.
I envy you with your wonderful position that you have there, and have the choir and the shul and the tradition. It's certainly something
it's a tremendous honor
unique,
and a
yes.
privilege.
Well, I wish you many many more years of accomplishment there, and I look forward
to you. Keep up the good work that you're doing too. You do a tremendous service to the community of Chazanut and Jewish music.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, we'll be in touch, and I guess it's not too early to say.
No, not yet.
Happy holiday. Happy
it's
holidays.
It's still summertime.
Okay, take care.
All the best wishes.
Thanks, Gideon. Take care.
Bye. Okay.